evolution. Well, you know, we don't want to change the world. Killing that's evolution. Well, you know, we don't want to change the world. When you talk about destruction, don't you know you can count me? In, out, in, out, be alright. Solution, well, you know, well, I'd love to see the flag. You ask for a contribution, well, you know, well, I'm doing what we can. One money, people mind that, hey, I'll tell your brother, have to wait. We, all right, we, all right, we, all right.
Welcome to Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Paul Rowland. That was, of course, Billy Bragg with his very succinct version of the Beatles' Revolution. Yes, we do sometimes talk about revolution. We've talked about the ancient debate, reform versus revolution. I guess we'll be talking about a version of that today. We're going to be talking about, I like you all, have been sort of following some of the debates. I can't stand to watch them all. I caught Bernie Sanders on 60 Minutes with the famous discussion of Castro and the Cuban literacy program. Shocking, became so controversial. We're going to be talking about all that. We're going to be talking about, the idea of, not fighting on the left. What does it mean? What does unity mean? All sorts of stuff like that. I'm all by myself, so I would love to engage with you, especially if you don't call in on a regular basis. Of course, I enjoy hearing those familiar voices as well, but it's all, I know there's a lot more people who listen to the show than call in, of course, but I know there's a lot of thoughtful people, maybe people who are just like when I'm listening to talk shows on this and other stations, I'm often thinking, well, maybe I should call in. Oh, not yet. I get my thoughts together, or you're doing stuff and just not ready to commit to sitting down and having a conversation. That's all good, but I really would like to hear from you. It's we don't get a lot of chance to talk, in public. You don't have to even give your name. You could be anonymous. Anyway, this is Wednesday Talk Radio. 503-231-8187, that's the number to call in. First order of business, though, coming up at 8:30, people are asked who are able to, I know this is short notice if you just heard about it, to go down to City Hall and support Commissioner Joanne Hardesty and fellow KBOO talk show host, who apparently was harassed and threatened on Saturday. Just to read through this briefly here. On Saturday afternoon at Chapman Square, there was a small rally organized by Portland's Liberation. First I've heard of them, a spinoff of Vancouver, Washington's alt-right protest group Patriot Prayer. The organization is mostly made up of ardent Trump supporters who spend time, this is from the Portland Mercury, who spend time filming confrontations with elected officials and anti-fascist activists to spark debate and gain followers on social media. Several men who had joined Patriot Prayer in instigating a street brawl on May 1st, 2019, outside of Cider Riot, were in attendance on Saturday. According to a flurry of videos taken that afternoon, the dozen or so rallygoers said they were there to protest, quote, attacks on independent journalists, a title they give to anyone publishing videos online. Several people unaffiliated with the group attended the rally to counter the group's right-wing messaging. Unlike the majority of the attendees, Isaacson, they're talking about this Portland Parks and Recreation employee, Gregory Isaacson, who was there with his purple outfit. Isaacson was not filming or recording the day's gathering. He arrived riding a bike and dressed in his usual protest getup, a purple blazer and matching hat. Oh, and then they talk about Isaacson's regular presence at the Patriot Prayer protests and he's been linked to creating stickers and signs that espouse anti-immigrant and nationalist ideals. He said this says linked. I don't know if that's proven. And there's some issues that some of his co-workers have around him, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, in videos from the rally, Hardesty is seen surrounded by people filming her with cell phones and yelling various accusations about violence, racism, and corruption. One man accusatorily calls Hardesty a black woman, the head of Black Lives Matter. Yeah. One woman asks Hardesty if she knows about the racist terms people are using against white people in Portland. And then she tries to talk to him, and they don't want to talk to her. They interrupt her, and she says, "You don't want to talk? I'm out of here." And then someone shouts an obscenity at her and says, "Resign the B word." Anyway, it goes on, and so there's, I guess, two issues: the issue of this Portland Parks and Recreation employee Isaacson, who's consorts with unsavory sorts of people, and the threatening of Joanne Hardesty, our fellow talk show host and Portland City Commissioner. So you're asked to go down there at 8:30 to support Commissioner Hardesty and say no tolerance for racism. And if you're not okay with what happened to Joanne, would like to express that, please call the mayor's office, 503-823-4120. I guess there's going to be a cookie giveaway, but it started at 6, so there may not be any more when you get there. Okay, that's out of the way. That's disturbing. I imagine being a white person, but knowing about the history of Portland, it's a... there's difficulties associated with being a person of color in this city. And when you become a city commissioner, you attain a high public visibility. And we just don't want things like that to escalate, do we? Okay. So, 503-231-8187. Have you been following the debates? Did you see the 60 Minutes? Well, have you been listening to all the extensive coverage on Democracy Now? Oh, that first thing I wanted to mention was the audience booing at Sanders at the debate. I was surprised. I heard that. As I said, I really can't stomach following this whole debate. It's just, there's just too much inanity. And the game playing is just so, I just can't take it. I mean, I guess that's what they have to do to try to put themselves head and shoulders above the rest. That's the fight. But did the fact that they basically were saying that, to guarantee getting in, you had to pay $1,500 a ticket? That's obviously the Democratic Party, Democrat establishment of South Carolina. Did that have something to do with the kind of people showing up at the debate booing Sanders? Because that hasn't happened at the other debates. He's actually, in my recollection, watching the other debates, he's actually gotten a fair amount of applause. So that kind of stuck out to me. It seemed really weird. And there is a lot of accusation of dirty tricks, sorts of things being played by the Democratic establishment at various levels to marginalize Sanders in his campaign. And what happened in Iowa, who knows? But there's certainly the question of the superdelegates. There's all sorts of issues. You probably know about it more about than I do. So if you want to talk about this, this is something I want to talk about. If you have more burning issues, please call me. Oh my God, when I just sort of throw it open right away, I get all sorts of callers. There's also an article I want to acknowledge. Will a Democratic Party deny Sanders the nomination even if he wins? The whole idea of a brokered convention. But this is all, this is all ways down the road. But a lot of people are thinking about it, especially since Sanders became, somewhat unexpectedly, the front runner. And I'll just read the first paragraph. Nearly every Bernie Sanders supporter I speak to these days exists on the same strange plane of existence. This is from William Rivers Pitt of on Truth Out just yesterday, I believe. They are optimistically terrified, warily thrilled, uneasily cheerful. Why? Their candidate is a clear frontrunner to secure the presidential nomination for a Democratic Party whose core establishment wants nothing more than to stop him in his tracks. Fueling the Sanders camp's fears and dampening their pleasure is the very real concern that the party might thwart his nomination at the convention. The party has the tools to do it even if the pieces fall into place just so. This unsteady situation would leave anyone in disorder. All right, well, we've got all kinds of questions. Let's see. John from Battleground. I haven't heard you, so let's go to you first. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, it's been a while. I have called in to you, and I like your show a lot. Thank you. This is what happened Sunday. I'm kind of getting slightly off topic, but not too far. Jamie Herrera Butler is a congresswoman out of Battleground, and she called our phone number and said, we're having a phone town hall, and if you want to ask any questions. So we said, sure. So they called back, and we had two hard questions. So we got into queue, and our questions were never answered. So obviously they screened us out because I think we were fairly early on in the queue. And the questions were all kind of like Republican medical health care questions mostly, and some salmon questions. Well, when this old lady called in about removing the dam, she was real upset about that idea. Jamie said, oh, she's heard from biologists that removing the dams would hurt baby salmon. And it's like the whole thing was a joke. I don't blame people in politics for not wanting to do in-person town halls because people are becoming more and more rude and it's pretty hard to conduct those things. But a town hall over the phone is really just propaganda and, you know, BS, as they can completely control the narrative and nobody can talk back and have a dialogue. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just wanted to describe that experience. It was really useless.
Okay. Well, thanks for that. Appreciate that check-in on some local political goings-on. Thank you for that, John from Battleground. Up next, we got Camilo. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to add one thing that you left out from the article in Mercury. It states that the police were in evidence and did nothing to protect Joanne from the harassment.
Oh, I must have hurriedly read through that. I actually didn't notice that. Thank you for that.
I think that's a key issue.
Wow. That's pretty intense, you know, because, you know, a public official, I mean, not that they should rise above, you know, any other citizen in terms of, but in a situation like that where you've got these known characters who've, you know, been involved in brawling, and you've got a public official who wades into the middle of them, that you'd think that that would raise some flags.
And I think that's a key issue for this election.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, you got anything else about anything I brought up or anything else?
Well, I mean, I'm a Bernie supporter. I'm a Bloomberg hater. I think that if the moderates controlled this, that the Democratic Party would be finished if Bloomberg gets the election and he gets defeated by Trump, which is inevitable. But, I mean, that's all speculation. But, you know, I think we in Portland, we know what to do.
Indeed. Well, I did read, it's been maybe a few weeks or a month, that actually, and I don't remember the whole context, that it is possible that actually Oregon could, for once, have a real role in the nominating process this year. Obviously,
well,
that's
really exciting because we've never had one before.
Right. I guess because it's, you know, it's could conceivably be really close.
Just remember, 2016, we had 29,000 people at the MOTA Center, and they were people outside. So, you know, I think we really got it going here for Bernie.
All right. Well, thanks, Camille. Always good to hear from you.
All right.
We got a couple people on the stack. Next up is Francis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the presidential race, but first on that subject of racism, and I frankly believe that these people that are spewing all this racist, ridiculous conversation are being given too much power, and I don't feel that it's free speech to be racist. I liken it to crying fire in a crowded theater. It's the same difference to me.
Uh-huh.
And that we allow it to continue is kind of absurd. And these people who, these small groups of people who come with their really ignorant talk are met with by people who help fuel the fire, and we don't resolve anything. I think that the free speech needs to be addressed, because it's not free speech. It's not free speech to say racist, hateful things. That's not free speech. That shouldn't even be given a platform.
Well, the problem is you can't...
our society.
According to the Constitution, you can't preemptively, based on what you think someone's going
to
see, prevent
according
them.
To the Constitution and opinions written about it, we have free speech, but we can't cry fire in a crowded theater. Is that correct?
Right. I'm just saying you can't preemptively stop people from meeting because you think they're going to say the kinds of things you say. I mean, anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
So why are we trying to stop them? Let them form their little groups and say their ignorant things and be gone. Why do we give them so much power?
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to discuss the presidency. And Bernie Sanders had an intelligent, thoughtful, diplomatic conversation about world affairs. That's what's needed in a president. And as far as unity goes, the unity of the people was demonstrated by what happened in Nevada in their caucus. So if the people continue to unite, all of these pundits and conflict stirrers can keep on doing what they're doing, because I think the people have figured it out.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that's just three.
It's the power. It's the people. It's the government of the people,
uh-huh.
by the people, for the people, not corporate interests, whether they be corporate media or warmongers. It's not what our government is about, and I think the people are about to take it back.
Well,
that's
a hopeful
the plan. Thought. I hope it happens.
I'm with you on that. That's for sure.
But there was quite a bit of unity demonstrated in the caucuses in Nevada. Very diverse caucus that it was.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
There's hope. There's hope.
Indeed.
Take care.
Okay. Thank you, Francis. Well, you know, that is just three states so far. And of course, there are criticisms of the caucus process itself. You know, it's hard to know to what extent the caucus actually, how fully it represents the, you know, the broader, you know, what would have been a primary. Of course, it's also hard to know how well any election actually represents the full electorate, but those are more indirect questions. So we got Rob Yep. One thing I wanted to bring up was, again, I'm not, you know, expressing any support for any candidate one way or another. In terms of like just my take on things, I don't know. I do find Sanders and Warren to be, I don't know, just I guess more, I don't know, they just resonate with me more in terms of like their personal, I don't know, their aura, and also just their style, their intellect, you know, their intellectuality. I find the others rather superficial in their presentation, in their understanding. I don't know. It's kind of a fine line. I have to be careful not to express support for any particular candidate, and I'm not sure where the line is in terms of just sort of doing sort of a review of my take on things. But anyway, let's just let the callers have it out. Oh, the one thing I wanted to say was, it's remarkable. You know, the Chris Matthews on MSNBC, you know, in effect likening the Sanders win in Nevada to the I believe the Nazis takeover of France, invasion of France. I mean, he really did say that. And he actually apologized personally to Sanders on the air. I mean, he didn't do it face-to-face in person, but he directed it to Sanders. And, you know, MSNBC is one of the media outlets that's been called out. You know, they're, of course, owned by Comcast, so they do seem to have some sort of corporate leaning, perhaps. How much that's expressed, you know, how much that gets expressed by management to the, you know, the people who are on air and writing the texts and stuff is, you know, who knows. But they've been really on Sanders' case, and you know, this hue and cry about socialism now, it's that in the debate on this last night, it was certainly there. Some people calling Sanders a communist, and they didn't do that last night. But the whole thing about, you know, him expressing, you know, whatever it was 30 years ago when he was a young man, I believe when he was mayor of Burlington, expressing, you know, admiration for the literacy programs of the Cuban government, and you know, and to his credit, he reiterated the support for some of those programs and saying, yeah, he's against authoritarian aspects of the Cuban government over the years, but they did do some good things. It's not, nothing's all good and all bad. Well, very few things are all good or all bad. But the fact is that you know, people are being forced to finally, perhaps, a bit of a breach may be opening up in this legacy of anti-communism, anti-socialism in this country, which is so deep. And people are actually being forced to reckon with the reality that there is popular support for a figure who's an avowed democratic socialist. So there you have it. But here we go. Oh, all of a sudden we got three people on the stack. Robbie's up next. Go ahead, Robbie.
Hey, good morning. Thank you so much for doing this. I got some quick points I'd like to bring up to all the Bernie Sanders supporters. Oh, and also with you talking about Warren and Bernie Sanders, I don't know why people consider Elizabeth Warren a progressive. She says that ICE combats terrorism and deals with drug dealers, and it's like that's completely a non-progressive standpoint. Her economic platform, just because she taxes the wealthy, you know, a wealth asset, it's not enough. But to the point about Iowa and Nevada, the two caucuses, I need anybody who is a Bernie Sanders supporter needs to download the Bernie app. There is a Bernie Sanders app. That is why they won Nevada. And that is how there is. If you look at the Iowa results, it is still not finalized. It's supposed to be coming out the next tomorrow. Is actually the day when they're supposed to finalize. The Iowa Democrats are supposed to do it. The guy resigned from the Iowa board because of this. That's because the Democrats rigged the election in Iowa. And the reason why it is the way it turned out is because of the Bernie Sanders app. There are tools on it. When we download it, you enter your information, you tell it how old you are, where you live, and basically what will happen is it gives you a state-by-state breakdown of what to do. So what they had on the app for any caucus goers is there was a tool where all the, I don't know what they are, like caucus captain precincts, you know, delegates, a lot of delegates that are in a certain county or whatever, they had this app, and they were able to record the results live right into the app, and that's how Bernie Sanders knew he won that night. However, Pete Buttigieg claimed he won. He was also the person who spent $42,000 on the app that did not work, developed by Democratic Party officials who used to campaign for Obama and Hillary. So it's amazing to me because I have liberal roommates and friends who are just like, oh, well, it was just the app that didn't work. No, this is how they rigged it. They had to go back on what they did because they were unaware that Sanders had this app which actually, you know, reported the live thing. So because of this, there may be a lawsuit that the Sanders campaign, and I might be speaking kind of loudly here, this is just some information that I have, but there may be, if they do not release the results, they've already asked to have them recounted, and so they asked for this to have recanvassed. Anyway, that's what's going on in Iowa, and because of this, the Democratic Party could not do the rigging that they tried to do in Iowa because of the Sanders app. So I highly recommend this app to everybody. Other, okay. Just two other quick points, if I could, unless you wanted to comment on that.
No, go ahead.
So regards to this whole socialism, capitalism, communism debate, one thing, and I really do believe that we need to engage verbally in a good way, in a progressive, productive manner. We need to be combating these ideologies and really explaining them well, because the truth of the matter is, socialism and capitalism are not at odds with each other as much as we like to think. We throw these words, not us personally, but people on the media, you know, media pundits throw these words out on the airwaves like, oh, you're a socialist, and that means one blanket statement. The truth of the matter is that a completely socialist nation, if you run a nation on nothing but socialist policies, that turns into communism. And then on the other side, if you have a true capitalist, a completely capitalist, what's the word? You know, just a reign of free market capital, true laissez-faire, that turns into fascism, essentially, because you have the corporations that turn it into a plutocracy. So we need to be, and this is how we need to be describing this to people, because when you're talking to your mom or your grandpa or, you know, the uncle about it, and they bring up that word socialism, you know, and they're like, oh, you know, like Sanders did this with Castro, he said that was a good idea or whatever, we need to be bringing up, oh, what about Pinochet in Chile, who massacred all these people, Nicaragua, these there's just the same amount of side of whatever free market capitalist, democratic, people who get installed by our American government and then also kill people and do all these horrendous,
indeed,
authoritarian things.
Okay.
So that was what I wanted to bring up, is just some tools for the listeners to be able to talk to these people and put it back. And one last thing I'm going to say, I saw a really funny meme about Mike Bloomberg, and it had basically the Make America Great Again hat, but it was blue, and it just said, Bloomberg be like this.
All right. Well, thank you. Appreciate that. We're going to go on to another caller. Okay, that the discussion of socialism, capitalism, communism, that's it's a complicated one. I can't say I'm the best fitted to engage it, or even to respond to what the last caller was just saying. So if anybody else wants to weigh in on that, but we are talking about the Democratic primaries. We're talking about the debates. We're talking about how people are reacting to Bernie Sanders taking the lead. I mentioned the audience booing Sanders at the debate last night in South Carolina, and the fact that there is $1,500 tickets to get into the debate. Did that ensure that a certain kind of person, because, you know, he hadn't been being booed at some of the others, you know, is the Democratic Party establishment, as a lot of people are saying, doing whatever they can to head off the possibility that Sanders might actually win the Democratic candidacy? All these are interesting questions. I had some other articles I wanted to get to if no one called in, but thankfully a lot of people did call in. I'm really grateful. There's an article on the Democratic Socialists of America website called A Brief History of the American Left. I think people, if they don't really know the history of what democratic socialism is, should be informed, you know, the differences, you know, that the last caller brought up between socialism, capitalism, communism. You put it in fairly stark terms. There's a lot of nuance. And on Democracy Now, just now, there's the, what's his name? who was talking about Bloomberg, who wrote that book. I actually interviewed him. I was one of the earlier people to interview him a couple of years ago about the misuses of philanthropy. He really called Michael Bloomberg out even before he entered the race. His massive use of his billions to nonprofits and to political candidates to basically buy support for his eventual candidacy for president, which he is now engaged in. Anyway, he was saying that there's more understanding of gender fluidity than socialist fluidity, which I thought was an interesting point, that people really are not, you know, there's a legacy from anti-communism, anti-socialism in this country of a lack of good grounding in political knowledge and understanding. So anyway, I recommend that, DSAUSA.org, A Brief History of the American Left. I was going to read some of that. And I will attempt to remember to link to these. I usually do. Last week I forgot. Anyway, I won't go on. Nick is up next. Go ahead, Nick. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Building back to the electoral stuff, on some ways what your last caller was trying to say about, you know, we're a mixed economy and no one really wants to be Venezuela or Cuba except maybe for health and literacy necessarily. But, and, you know, I really have been more interested in moderate candidates. I've been following Bernie Sanders since he was mayor of Portland. I grew up in Massachusetts and Vermont and, you know, have always loved him dearly.
Burlington,
but, you know,
right?
He's going to have to deal with, you know, the Congress that he's got, the Senate that he's got, the Supreme Court that he's got, the, you know, sprawling federal apparatus that he'll have to run. And I'm old enough to remember McGovern. And, you know, at the time, Nixon was just, you know, out of bounds beyond what we thought in terms of being a, you know, corporate fascist, and a liar and a cheat and, you know, deeply into his own dark psyche. Well, you know, Trump is worse. And I think, you know, of course, I'm supporting Sanders as he becomes the nominee. But I am concerned about my friends or cousins in swing states, because that's where it's going to be, right?
Well, I just want to flag one thing.
Being able to argue to them and be able to make as strong a case as we need to make, or at least for all his fervent supporters, I hope they can make that swing to convincing people who've, you know, drunk a lot of Kool-Aid over the years about socialism, and get this election to turn.
Huh. So one thing, you brought up McGovern. I actually read something recently. I didn't really pursue it. That there's people who have said. You know, in this, along the lines of what people are saying the Democratic establishment is doing and may be planning to do to Sanders, that they actually sabotaged McGovern's campaign. You know, who knows? I haven't really looked into that. It's an interesting thought, because the fact that he lost by such a landslide to Nixon.
Oh my God, I lived in Massachusetts. You know, we were the only friggin' state that McGovern won. The only state that he won. And, you know, if you look into his history, he'd done stuff with fair voting and getting, you know, fair voting acts and districting. And about this part about the, you know, yeah, it's rigged because South Carolina Democrats decided, or some of them paid $1,500 to be there. Yeah, that was rigged. That's the South Carolina party. But, you know, your activists listening, it's your Sanders activists, know the Democratic Party of Oregon, it's got all those influences. And, you know, those things are true, but it's still made up of the individual people, the people who are going to, I'm sure, support Sanders. And that's true in South Carolina. It's sure it's feared and it's corrupt, but that's what we've got, right? And, you know, though Trump is really disastrous for the things we care about, you know, I would put climate change as the number one, and most of the other numbers too, but it really does matter. Even your worst centrist candidates will be better than Trump. Your worst centrist candidates are not getting it. It looks like Sanders is going to get it. But,
well, it's still early. I want to, you know, admonish people that there was that wave of enthusiasm coming out of Nevada and after the Iowa and New Hampshire. But, you know, we're coming up on South Carolina, which is seems to be a different picture, and then, you know, so-called Super Tuesday coming up in a few days. So yeah, it's early. Let's hold off on too much enthusiasm to those who are Sanders supporters, but it definitely is, you know, people didn't expect him to come out that fast, seemingly.
Well, I just urge his supporters to, you know, sure, support their guy, but be ready about how they're going to, you know, should he not get it through whatever, however corrupt the mechanisms are, they're going to have to turn that enthusiasm to whoever we've got, because it's so much better than Trump.
Well, okay, well, thank you for that. Appreciate that, Nick. And we got a couple other callers on the line, and another line open at 503-231-8187. I just want to let you know that coming up next at 9 o'clock, it's Inside Washington County, where host Rob Solomon speaks with former Oregon Governor Dr. John Kitzhaber about health policy and the Oregon Health Plan. I guess Kitzhaber's coming back on the scene here on KBOO. Okay, at 9:30, it's Culture in Motion, where art, culture, politics, education, and social movements meet with hip-hop as the guiding light with host Mike Crenshaw. At 10 o'clock, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. After that, 11, it's Art Talk Bus Stop, a show produced by students and educators from Reynolds High School. And 11:30, it's Wings, the Women's International News Gathering Service. And don't forget, you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. Want a third way to listen to your favorite KBOO programming? You can download our mobile app. I am Paul Rowland. I am the regular host of Wednesday Talk Radio, one of five, count them, talk shows. Well, actually, Friday has actually been not a talk show, but we have been inviting proposals for new hosts of Friday Talk Radio. And on Thursday, Joanne Hardesty has been off and on because of her commitments to her job as Portland City Commissioner. And we've had some other guest fill-ins. I'm not sure exactly where that slot is going. But we do have regular Monday and Tuesday. We've got Celeste and Cecil on Monday, and we've got Joe and Abe on Tuesday. And I am here on Wednesday. So that is where it's at. It looks like we lost one of our callers, or maybe not. Maybe he's here on the line. Whoever you are, go ahead. You're next to talk.
Hi, this is Harry, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you forgot about Teresa Mitchell on Thursdays.
Well, she's at 9 o'clock, actually.
Oh, that's right. That's true, true. What I'm calling about is we're talking about the election and the primaries, and I want to remind everybody what happened in 2016 for Oregon. People don't realize that Oregon actually voted for Bernie Sanders, but because of the superdelegates, it went to Hillary Clinton. And who were the superdelegates? Our governor and Blumenauer.
Uh-huh.
And the news media, the local news media, didn't bring this up, what exactly happened, because they're in collusion. And
so you're saying Blumenauer went against Sanders?
Yeah.
Huh. That's Earl Blumenauer.
News media the local news media kept it quiet, and they didn't really announce that's what happened. But they need not that we have to kind of punish our own. To make sure that wasn't right. I mean, example, our governor. Well, I mean, I'm sure at her election, if everyone stayed home but then again, we would have had the Republican governor. What was his name? I can't think of his name. But which would have been a worse story. But they weren't held accountable.
Mm-hmm.
Our governor was held accountable for voting for Hillary, and same thing with Blumenauer. And so this can happen again. And did the Democratic Party get rid of superdelegates after that happened? No. They ramped it up. Instead of the second vote, now it's the first.
Now explain. And, explain that. Explain that.
Well, if you don't get 50, if you don't go 50% plus one, or 50% plus one delegate, you can when the first counting happens, you win automatically. If you don't get that, well, then you go to the superdelegates, which is, you know, been handpicked by the Democratic Party, and that's what happened to Bernie Sanders, and how they treated Bernie Sanders in 2016. Okay, he came up on stage and said, "Okay, fine, I want to help you to Hillary Clinton. I want to help you win this election. I'll put my support behind you. This, that, and the other." So there was a meeting on strategy. So he comes. This is during the primary. So he sits down, you know, with Hillary and everybody else. Then two security guards came in, grabbed Bernie Sanders, and kicked him out of the room. And that's when Bernie Sanders went back to being an independent. And it was just horrible how that happened. It's probably one of the reasons why Hillary lost, because a lot of Bernie supporters stayed home. And I think the Democratic Party is trying to do the same thing. Their Democratic Party does not have Democratic rules and whatever. And superdelegates is something that has to be gotten rid of.
Okay.
That's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Harry. Much. I was just hesitating because I got a note handed to me from my engineer, Liam. So Linda Olson-Osterlin will be our host tomorrow. As I said, Joanne's does usually one or two a month, I believe, and Linda's been filling in, and she'll talk with Mike German about William Barr. That should be interesting. So that's tomorrow on Wednesday Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. We've only got one up. We still got about 13 minutes left. 503-231-8187. Everybody seems to want to talk about this election, which is understandable because, you know, having an avowed democratic socialist as the front runner for the presidency, for the Democratic nomination to the presidency, is an interesting thing. You know, I was in this article, Brief History of the American Left. It's been about 100 years ago since we had a serious socialist candidate. That was, of course, Eugene Debs, the great Eugene Debs. And since then, well, there was a brief resurgence during the Depression. People thought it would go a little further, but of course, then we had the New Deal, one of the early historic compromises between the capitalist bosses in labor mediated by the state. That's the nature of the so-called welfare state, and a whole host of labor regulations and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, Eugene Debs got 100,000 votes in 1900, and he got nearly 1 million votes 12 years later in 1912. And that was the last time. There's obviously been a socialist and communist and various third party candidates for president since then. But the Socialist Party had, oh God, they write, this is in this article, again, I recommend it. I promise I will make up a program page, which I hadn't done yet, for this show. And link to some of these things, but of course you can look them up yourselves. Anyway, now we've got two people. Tim is up first. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I too am a Bernie Sanders supporter, and I'm disgusted by the way the Democrats are reacting to this whole thing. But in the end, if he wins all the primaries, I don't think it's going to make a difference, because they'll just kill him. Just like they did Martin Luther, the Black Panthers, Bobby Kennedy.
Wait a second. We've been on a kind of, you know, a positive note thus far. That's a bit of a downer.
Reality, look at American history.
Yeah, but it is a possibility. But let's not already make it in a certainty in advance. That's a.
Oh, I'm not saying it's a certainty.
Okay.
But that's what I think might just happen.
That's sure.
Rather than giving the reins of power, either that or maybe there would be a civil war. Maybe parts of the country would break up. I don't know. Who knows? All kinds of things are possible.
Well, I prefer to look at this as, you know, being a more of an anarchist tendentially, but certainly a social minded person, and socialism being, you know, caring for everybody, for all people, and not certain privileged classes. I believe is kind of I look at it as the nutshell of socialism.
That's what
I've
worked all my life for.
I was just gonna say it's heartening to me that this historic, you know, I consider it sort of a brainwashing, a sort of a propagandizing, a control of the ideological mindset of this country against socialism is maybe breaking up, and that young people seem, for whatever reason, I'm not sure exactly why it is, maybe just time
pain.
And attrition.
Pain and hopelessness. You get enough pain and enough hopelessness, and your eyes may start to open.
That could be it, or it could
around.
Just be the perennial, you know, life force of youth, and them not being so under the thumb of that ideological domination. I don't know, but whatever it is, it to me, it's heartening that there seems to be a change, some kind of shift culturally, politically. It is heartening. So I prefer to look at that side of it rather than, you know, what might happen.
I believe in looking at all sides. Brother.
Okay.
You gotta look at all possibilities and prepare for as many of them as you can.
Fair enough.
I think this is one realistic possibility.
Okay. Well.
And so, I mean, I'm not about to hit the trenches. I'm too old and blind. So what the hell am I going to do? But I can still think. And don't you remember back in the 60s how we finally were able to stop the draft and we're finally able to get out of Vietnam? And then we all took a damn break. We never should have hung it up. We had just begun to win a couple of victories, and we walked away.
Well, that's a bit of a simplification, but yeah, okay, I can see that in the spirit of that. There's some truth there.
Because we're animals, brother.
All right.
We're human beings, but we're also animals. And there's always that conflict within us. The part of us wants to do what's good, what's love, what's right. But all of the other part wants to eat
I'm not going to go along with that, because I think that's a certain prejudice on the basis of humans, and maybe a misunderstanding about what other animals are about. But on that note, I'm going to let you go because I got a couple more callers. So thank you so much for calling and weighing in. We've got a lot of different voices this morning. Not so many women. Which unfortunately tends to happen on talk radio for whatever reason. Anyway, we got Michael up next, and we only got about 6 minutes left. Go ahead, say what you got to say.
Yeah, good morning. So the thing of Bernie Sanders and socialism, there's more to that. I mean, Bernie Sanders, he says, oh, there's this good thing about Cuba. They did literacy. He says, there's this good thing about China. Whatever it was. And, you know, to me, that's like saying, well, you know, the Nazis in Germany made the trains run on time. Well, yeah, but why is that the first thing you say about them? Stalin killed probably more people than Hitler did.
So you're equating the Castro regime to the Hitler regime? That seems kind of odd to me, because they didn't actually engage in any kind of genocidal selecting of a particular group. They were certainly had prejudices against homosexuals. They had probably other tendencies that were not in the direction of social justice. But to compare that to Hitler, I think, is a extreme disservice.
Well, I'm not saying Cuba is just like. I'm not saying Cuba is just like Nazi Germany, but Russia under Stalin was a lot like Nazi Germany, and Mao's China. They killed so many.
Yeah, but what did Sanders say that was good about Stalin's Soviet Union or about Mao's China?
Well, Sanders aligned himself with the Soviet Union. Sanders honeymooned in the Soviet Union in 1988 at the height of the Cold War. What does that tell you? And here's the thing. He insists on using the word socialism. And he talks about, well, what I mean by socialism is Scandinavia, Sweden, Denmark, etc. Those are not socialist countries. Those are social democracies. If he wanted to speak accurately, he would call them social democracies, and maybe he'd call himself a social democrat. But instead, he says he's a socialist. Why does he do that? And given his history of just like, you know, only thinking of the good things to say about a place like Cuba or Russia or China.
You're conflating them again. You're conflating them again. You didn't say specifically what he said about the Soviet Union. You kind of glossed over that. There's what we've got is an old tape that 60 Minutes brought up that was him praising the literacy programs of Cuba. That's what we've got.
He also said about China. He said China brought more people out of poverty than any other country, as though bringing people out of poverty
well,
is more important.
Yeah, but let's have a little more nuanced conversation. Maybe he said that about the early years of Mao. Does he say that now about what China ended up becoming? You know, people have more nuanced perspectives than you are giving them credit for. You can say that the Chinese Revolution was a good thing at the time because look at the nature of the authoritarian, basically feudal society of China at the time. So you're saying that it was not a good thing to go against that? Okay, so then revolutions have their own course. So then, unfortunately, a lot of revolutions do tend up to take on a similar authoritarian character of the society that they fought against. Is that inevitable? Is that all socialist societies? That's what people like you tend to say. I don't agree with that. There's a much
well, people like me know the difference between socialism and a social democracy. And when Sanders says socialism and he says he's talking about Scandinavia, he's lying because Scandinavia is not socialism.
Well, I would like to hear what Sanders himself says on that point, but we don't have now. But we only have a couple minutes left and we got another caller. So I got to let you go, Michael. Thank you for calling. Good to hear from you as always. Boris, you're their last caller, and I've only got a couple minutes. Go ahead.
Good morning, Paul. I have a prediction and a warning for the listeners. The prediction is that the DNC, in their scheming wisdom, is going to make sure that their darling boy is this little turd Buttigieg. And it's going to be presented as, oh, look at this. What a surprise. The DNC chose a little gay soldier as their chosen one for the presidency, and everybody's supposed to get all excited. And I think, you know, it's based on basically the fact that they think they're going to take everyone by surprise, and it's everybody's supposed to get all excited about it and that. But the warning comes in the fact that I have heard two different neo-fascist neocons, whatever you want to call them, support this guy. And they already have a talking point developed for his support. They say he checks all the boxes. I've heard two different neocons use that term. He checks all the boxes. So you've got the neocons backing this guy, and he's a corporatist militarist, which the DNC would be all excited about. So that's my prediction and my warning.
Okay. I would not have chosen the wording you chose regarding Mr. Buttigieg, but...
Well, my bias is showing.
Yes. Anyway,
and one other thing, since we're short on time here, I want to get this in. I'm trying to get a hold of Sean, who calls in occasionally. And if you're listening, I'm going to leave my contact information with Paul at the front desk after 9 o'clock. So please call and let's get in touch.
Okay. With that, we got to get out of here in a second. Interesting conversation. Obviously, one that people really want to talk about, judging from the frequency and quantity of the calls we had in. Will the Democratic Party deny Sanders the nomination even if he wins? Well, that can be forestalled if he actually wins 50 plus one on the first round of voting. What will be the future of, you know, how is it going to play out, you know, in terms of each state, how they deal with this, you know, two billionaires, some moderates, a Democratic socialist, and all the whatever is going on there on the Democratic side. It's going to be interesting. So stay tuned, and I hope you get a different take here on KBOO Community Radio that you appreciate and support. Go to kbo.fm and check out what we do, how you can become involved as a volunteer, as a contributor. I got to get out of here, make way for Inside Washington County up next. Thanks for listening.